thing I've told you, being brought up in the spirit of St. Francis, from my first Mass, which I celebrated on June the 21st, 1947. Ever since, every Mass, I pray for the gift of martyrdom. I'm still waiting. Preaching. And this is, as we said during the homily, we are all called upon to proclaim Christ's word to others and convert people. Did I get an agreement for new people to be at least one convert in a year? In the next year? Did I do that?
Yeah.
What was the date? Now look, just to make sure, if somebody could write it down so we don't forget. Today is the 17th of April. Am I correct? Is it? Okay. 1994, right? So by September, by April the 17th, 1995, the Lord spares me. I'm here. We'll have class. I'm going to get from all of you a report. And, of course, don't be satisfied with one convert, but more, but at least one. I want every able-bodied person attending these classes to bring at least one person either back to the church or to the Catholic faith by April the 17th, 1995. Is that a deal? See, we have no choice. There is work to be done in that to the whole world. Why don't you do now? It's 3:36. And I think the usual procedure is at 3:40 or 3:45 as we start answering questions. Well, let me make a very important announcement. As I mentioned earlier, I spoke to Cardinal Sanchez, my Vatican Superior, this morning by telephone. He was in the United States during Easter week for less than 2 days. He spoke on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. He has given us two assignments, and I assured him in my phone conversation today that we would carry through. One are the two assignments, and are not just a one-job deal. They are two publications. One, for the formation of priests. Holy Father is deeply concerned over the need that priests have for ongoing spiritual and doctrinal formation. By November of this year, we promised the Congregation for the Clergy we would have the first issue of this publication in print. Next week I plan to give you more data. Second publication is to be called the Catholic Catechist. And behind the Catholic Catechist as a publication And this is to be monthly. And to start publication as soon as we can, hopefully this summer. Behind the publication, we plan on an association which the Holy See is involved in. I want to make absolutely, absolutely sure. That's why I called Carlos Sanchez up this morning so I could then share this with you. Yes, he does want an association of Catholic catechists or Catholic Catechist Association whose organ of publication then would be this publication called the Catholic Catechists. We are soliciting funds. This will cost money. Within a week, my hope is to provide you at least with a basic outline of both forthcoming publications. And of course, I would like to have all of you somehow involved, and others you can suborn you to service to cooperate. The Holy See, I have said it more than once, is desperately poor. The budget of the American bishops is higher than that of the Pope for the whole church. The faith must be preserved. And the Holy Father has no illusions. Even as so many of the mistaken and bad ideas emanating from America, so correspondingly, the Holy Father and those who work with him depend on the United States to help the rest of the world. Here, I repeat, on the two gravest needs which the Catholic Church has to strengthen the spiritual and doctrinal formation of her priests and to motivate the Catholics, especially the laity, in not just, say, receiving the forthcoming catechism, but to become catalysts for catechizing in a way that by ourselves we'd never dream of doing, that I wouldn't dream of doing. I don't have the authority, but Rome does. You'll be provided with further information already by next Sunday. And now, some of your questions. Given the number of questions, I'll have to make the answers rather short. Is there a good reason why churches are removing the tabernacle from in front of the church to a side or back of the church? There is no good reason. St. John's image of the woman and her offspring pursued by the dragon and fleeing into the desert is usually applied to the end times. I obscured her Scott Hall, though not denying its application to the end of times, sees this as a story told to St. John by Our Lady of the flight of the Holy Family into the desert to Egypt to escape Herod the Edomite. He says, Edom means red. Herod is the first red dragon. What do you think? Oh, you can say that, but you don't stop. You don't stop with Herod and Christ's flight into Egypt. Oh no, it's going on right now. How do I explain why it is necessary to go to a priest to confession? I spoke with a convert, and this was something she didn't quite accept. Well, the poor dear, work on her so she will accept it. Because being a Catholic means you believe on faith that Christ gave the apostles the power to forgive sins and forgive sins after they are manifested. On making a confession, that means earful confessions. Auricular. That auricular confession of sins is a divine mandate. Why is it necessary? Because Christ said so. Period. Three of us are secular Franciscans. Our fraternity is, by God's grace, completely Orthodox, not to study the friars we have had as advisors. We will be starting a new formation class next month. Would you like us to give a name and number? Would you like us to give a name and a number? Oh, yes. By all means. With altar girls, or will altar girls be allowed to serve the Latin Tridentine Rite Mass? An interesting question. That would show they are really, really devoted. In any case, pray for the church. The pressure from the feminist movement is horrendous. And the word is horrendous. Please explain in layman's terms what the fundamental option is. I could not understand what the Holy Father was driving at. I would not use the verb driving at. What the Holy Father is saying is there is a very basic error regarding sin called the fundamental option, which claims that every human being, at least once in his or her life, is faced with a fundamental option to either accept or reject God. But then they go further and they claim that fundamental option is the only mortal sin you can commit. No single sin is ever mortal. No adultery is ever mortal. No single abortion is ever mortal sin. What constitutes a mortal sin, and therefore should be confessed, is the habit of what we call mortal sins, where a person has rejected God. On those premises, almost no one, except of course the devil, would be committing mortal sins. The main single reason for so many empty confessions or confessionals in the Western world. And the genius behind that error is the Jesuit Karl Rahner. We are redeemed by Christ's sacrifice, that is grace. A preternatural gift becomes available to us. We see Our Lady was saved in anticipation of Christ's merits at the first instant of her life. must we not say that all the grace given to our first parents, not only after the fall, but even at the first instant of their lives, was given also in anticipation of Christ's sacrifice? You can say that, but that's not the way the church teaches. In other words, it is so the church teaches. It is only because the human race fell and then incarnation took place, and therefore the grace given since the fall is the grace either at anticipation or subsequent to the incarnation. So we do not, strictly speaking, speak of the grace to our first parents being in anticipation of Christ's sacrifice. What book besides the Bible is a good or best source of theological knowledge of God? Really, the Church's teachings, our official teaching about God Himself, is it Vatican I? How rare can I get it? Priests almost never teach about God Himself. Then I would say, Ludwig Ott, O-double-T, Ludwig Ott, translation of the German, given titles, Fundamentals of Dogma is one title I'm familiar with. So Ludwig Ott, O-double-T, is a synthesis of the Church's teaching over the centuries, organized in the form of theses, a very compact book, but extremely useful. Where the Church's official teaching about God, it is found in many places, but especially in Vatican I. The divine attributes are spelled out in detail in the decisions and defined doctrines of the First Vatican Council, and the text of the First Vatican Council can be found, the 10 publishers has a book called The Teachings of the Church, which include all the decisions and decrees of the First Vatican Council. They are located near many Catholic churches that are convenient for us to attend, but every Mass is loaded with abuses. Should we go out of our way, 100 miles round trip, at an inconvenient time, 5 a.m., to attend the Tridentine Mass, which is approved by the bishop, or is it acceptable to keep going to our local church? Well, I would say this depends on you. You certainly are free to go even 50 miles each way. On the other hand, you surely may also attend even these abused masses. But watch it. Be careful that either you understandable, shall I call it charity or sympathy, you do not imbibe some of the ideas. We are living in a revolutionary world. Dioceses have been hit by a theological hurricane. In Chicago, for example, they're not going to turn over parishes to women, to be run by women. Just for today, and one, a nun who did not wear any garb, now is going around dolled up in a clerical car. The recently appointed appointed pastor. Lord, help us. Things are very serious. The revolution will pass. This cannot go on. Catholic Church cannot survive on these conditions. But somebody had better keep the faith intact. Is it an obligation to avoid abusive masses, or is it more important to go to any mass on a daily basis? Well, I would say to go to any mass on a daily basis. But be prudent, be careful, and do not unnecessarily expose yourselves to ideas that some of these abusive masses will practice. If you have the choice, which mass would you prefer to celebrate? Number one, Novus Ordo in English. Two, Novus Ordo Latin. Third, the old Latin Tridentine. Thank you. Well, I'd like to celebrate all three. What I do back home, as a matter of policy, is regularly celebrate the Novus Ordo in English. But I'm very happy to say the Novus Ordo in Latin, and I deliberately, though I could, I abstain from offering Mass in the Tridentine Latin, though I deeply, highly appreciate and approve. Why do I do that? To maintain my freedom, that I will have the leverage, and no one can tell me that I am, say, following the Tridentine ritual out of emotion. No. I may have told you that we are planning, a priest friend of mine, we are planning to start a movement among priests who will have both Latin Masses as part of their practice, the Novus Ordo Mass and the Tridentine Mass, and priests who are strongly in favor of the Latin be authorized to say both Masses. And we so far have about 80 priests committed to that practice, and we further have a bishop backing the venture. Can a priest improvise his way of baptizing? Question. Can a priest improvise his own way of baptizing? I heard about one who baptizes in the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sanctifier. Was the infant validly baptized? Answer. There might be some question whether it is licit, but as long as the intention is to do what the Church intends, it's valid. Sorry, dear Father, you are wrong. You are wrong. He continues, the old traditional formula, in the name of the Father, and so on, is not difficult to learn and should be used. It's much better, of course, when the baptism is both valid and licit, as the liturgy and the parents expect. Spontaneous improvisations are a sign of talent among musicians in Dixieland jazz bands, but it signifies nothing in the conferral of sacraments. Not so fast, Father. Not so fast. It may possibly be a valid baptism. I don't think so. And this is a problem that we're facing. Improvisations, my eye. All kinds of introductions, words removed, words added, which affect not merely the laceity, but the validity. We videotape our Tuesday evening daily Mass for rebroadcast the next weekend on local cable TV and even CTN daily. That Tuesday Mass is the next Sunday liturgy. My question is, do people who view and partake in our Mass broadcast receive the same graces except for receiving communion as they would if they went to the Mass at church? No. Lowercase, no. You mentioned that not all the homilies are right. What criteria does one use to know whether an homily is right or is suspect, especially if you are granted one? Well, this has been my policy over the years. I tell people who have had an homily granted by the church to trust God and their homily is valid. Trust God, it is valid. Having said that, are there more for the company, rather than children in order, is valid enough? Sure. Are there those more?